Welcome to the Ecom Breakthrough Podcast. Are you ready to unlock the full potential and growth in your business? You've already crossed seven figures in sales, but the challenge is knowing how to take your business to the next level. Join Josh Hadley, an eight-figure e-com business owner and investor, as he interviews highly successful business owners. Get ready, because you're going to learn specific actions you can take today to help your business reach its full potential and leave a lasting impact on the world.
Welcome to the Ecom Breakthrough Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Hadley, where I interview the top business leaders in e-commerce. Past guests include Adam Heist, Kevin King, and Michael E. Gerber, the author of The E-Myth. Today, I'm speaking with Yoni Mazur, the Chief Growth Officer and co-founder of Getida, a cloud-based technology that analyzes your data, reconciles your inventory, and then case managers file claims for maximum reimbursements on your behalf. Today, we are going to be talking a lot about the things that you might be overlooking as an Amazon seller where you're losing margin, and also where is the puck going in the e-commerce space so that you can start skating towards it. This episode is brought to you by Ecom Breakthrough Consulting, where I help seven-figure companies grow to eight figures and beyond. Listen, Yoni, I started my business back in 2015, and I grew it to an eight-figure brand in 7 years, but it took me a lot longer than it really needed to get to that eight-figure mark. And that's because I made a lot of mistakes along the way that made that path a lot harder. There were cash flow mistakes that I made. There were bad product launches. There were bad hires that I made, and not knowing who to hire and how to hire properly. I wish I would have had a mentor along the way that would have been able to help, you know, steer around those obstacles a little bit quicker, overcome those hurdles. So to our listeners that are hitting similar roadblocks or stumbling blocks, and they want to know the next steps to take their brand to the next level, go to ecombreakthrough.com. That's ecom with two M's to learn more. And as a special bonus to my podcast listeners, this month I'm giving away one $10,000 comprehensive business strategy audit session at no cost. All you need to do is email me at josh@ecombreakthrough.com and in your subject line, say strategy audit, and then plead your case as to why I should choose you and your brand to work with for this month. But today I am super excited to introduce y'all to Yoni. Yoni Mazur is the CGO and the co-founder of Getida. Yoni began developing Getida after successfully operating a $20 million annual Amazon FBA business, selling fashion brands internationally. Getida specializes in Amazon discrepancy analytics and consulting. By utilizing data visibility technology, Getida focuses on discovering and managing financial and inventory-related discrepancy with billions of dollars of transactions managed daily. Yoni also comes with military intelligence experience, having served in the IDF Special Navy Intelligence. So with that introduction, Yoni, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you so much for having me.
Yoni, I'm sure many of our audience members, if they've been to Amazon events, they have definitely come across your path because I feel like you are at almost every single event there is for Amazon sellers. So I love that you're always on kind of like the cutting edge of what is everybody talking about in the Amazon industry? And then, you know, where's the puck going so that we can kind of skate towards that? And so I want to kind of start off our conversation with that. Yoni, you've been to a lot of conferences recently. You've heard what everybody's talking about. Where do you see e-commerce going in Amazon specifically over the next 3 to 5 years that, you know, entrepreneurs should be preparing themselves for?
There we go. So, you know, we're in 2024 already. And I think this year will be the year where we all realize and see the true impact of, you know, the AI tools, the generative AI. You know, a lot of seeds have been sown with this environment, but we don't know the long-term, impact of them yet. And I guess the promise of all these AI tools is helping the little guy, the small and medium, you know, businesses kind of level the playing field. So your catalog can start and your listings on Amazon or any channel that you sell on, be able to, in relatively very low cost, to bring it up to speed and make it feel and look like a billion-dollar brand. So, make it feel and look like a billion-dollar brand. So in 2024, we'll see if that promise is being delivered, if the little guys are really making it you know, work for them. I think that the challenge is that the speed of it is so fast. Like, I know the Sam Altman, you know, there was also OpenAI had a whole turbulence, you know, a few months ago back in November. He was out for a few days, hired by Microsoft. Anyways, even before that, he announced how he created this whole environment where you can start generating your own tools with OpenAI, like your own marketplace is going to create a marketplace. So basically, it will be interesting to see how some sellers are able to create their own environments, AI environments that are unique and proprietary to them. And by creating those environments, they're able to really be on the cutting edge of, you know, organizing the catalog and the whole business structure and scaling, and really, really scaling. Because if you're doing six figures, seven figures, or low eight figures, if you can harness the power of these tools to really scale up your operations effectively with a lean team, that will be the dream. So 2024 will be in the cutting edge of that.
I love that. Yoni, are there any AI tools specifically? You mentioned ChatGPT, OpenAI. Are there any tools that, you know, sellers should be aware of or be looking into that you think are going to be a game changer from the AI space?
I can mention one that I'm familiar with in our space. It's called eContent. I don't know if you heard of them yet before.
We had Max on the podcast previously.
There we go. So Max is up to great things. I know he was also a part of the accelerator. It's an eBay accelerator. I think it's called, this Y Combinator is the first one. And then the second one, I forgot the name of it. In San Francisco, it's like a 4 month kind of intense accelerator environment where you have to kind of bring your developers and really work intensely on preparing your products to really shine in the market. If you do it successfully, you get funded. Afterwards, you get funded. So he's there and he's gearing up to the next dimension of that. In short, what they do, eContent is you're able to, plug into their platform and put your image of the product and then really generatively say, hey, I want my product to be on a table with five chairs around it and these colors and in this house and these windows, like, and boom, it creates a whole scene for you in a beautiful way, right? So once again, harnessing the power of technology to make your products and catalog shine, but also on the content side, on your copyright. So I want to, this is my product. I want to explain it or show it in text in this kind of mood or this kind of ambiance. So this way you can really, craft your listing to the next level. So the ones who are going to be applying that, the sellers, hopefully will see that lift. Because all the other sellers who are not applying this will just look like their listings and their products will kind of look stale and outdated. It's almost like, it's like walking into, if I take this to brick and mortar world, to the physical world, if you go into Target, if you go to Target today, it has a certain ambiance and feel, right? Or if you go to, local moms and pop shop in the 50s in the main street, if you're going to see, you're going to be at Discord, you're going to be like, this is not comfortable for me. It's not something I'm, feeling energetic to buy as a consumer. When you go into an old store from the 50s and never got updated compared to when you go to Target or as they say, Target, some people with the finesse of it. I think something like that. So the consumer inside Amazon and shopping online, they're going to start feeling the distance and the gap between the listings that are very, very, stimulating and the ones that are kind of old school, like I'm an image, I'm a carousel, kind of boring, So that'll be the dimension that I think will probably to be more evident 2024 as all these sellers embrace those tools and use them, like eContent as an example as well.
Interesting. Is there anybody that you would recommend people follow along in terms of, somebody in the e-commerce space that's really making a lot of big changes or advancements utilizing AI, right? I think that the idea of being able to have ChatGPT and have your own bots doing work for you sounds appealing, but for most of us, it's like, where do I even begin? How do I get something like that going? Do you have any recommendations that way?
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot right now. Nobody immediately comes to mind that had a meaningful impact, recording this. As we go along, I'm going to have to see if anything pops up. Too early stage. It's like asking, because it's like in the NBA's in the 70s. You say, who's going to be Michael Jordan in the 80s? He only came a few years, so we don't know who's going to be that Michael Jordan that was able to kind of push the industry forward because it was so, magnetic with his ability to perform with all these tools. So too early to tell at this point.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you another thing is if somebody's really killing it right now and killing it so much, they're not going to pop up and say, look what I'm doing so quickly, so fast. But to the only exception, you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Aaron Cordovez, he's pretty, Aaron from Zulai Kitchen. Uh-huh.
Yep.
He's actually, you know, I take it back. He's pretty good. I've been to a conference in New York in November, AMZ Innovate. And what he did was pretty interesting. He, you know, Zulay Kitchen, I think his brand does over 100 million. So he's nine figures, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
So he what he did was sellers that were brave enough to say, hey, here are my listings. They put it on a big screen and he just tears it apart. He shows them how he compares it to others. And right away, you can see the differences, the gap, the delta. So, you know, puts up the listing, he takes, he picks up the category. He sees the top player in the category and where this seller is located or this particular ASIN or product. And then starts ripping it apart. And he shows them how more stimulating the difference between the listings are. And he has a huge catalog of hundreds, if not even, I think, thousands of SKUs. And the reason he's able to do it because he is very, very good at scale. And I think he's also adopting a lot of those tools. So, and he has a show, a podcast show, I believe, as well. So heads up on that. He'll probably flush out how he's utilizing some of these techniques and tools with AI to scale, to keep scaling.
Awesome. I love that. Well, I think as you mentioned, you know, we're in the early stages of AI and being able to implement it into our businesses. But I think the important thing to implement here is actually paying attention to ChatGPT, to OpenAI, and not just turning a blind eye to it, because, you know, that rock star, you know, or MVP hasn't necessarily appeared quite yet, right? Which means there's still a lot of room for improvement, a lot of room for opportunity. And that might be you, right? And so at the end of the day, it's whoever's going to hustle the hardest, right? Whoever's going to put forth the fight and the effort to go learn about it, to go test it, to go start proving their own model is going to be the person that wins. And I think arguably, you know, can you operate figuratively like a billion-dollar company, but if you're only operating an eight-figure brand, imagine having all of those resources that a billion-dollar company has without having to pay the salaries of a billion-dollar brand, and imagine the growth that you could experience.
Exactly. Yeah, it's exactly what it's all about. That promise, that hope, right? That you can really perform like a billion-dollar company without all that cost. So you can really be so agile and dynamic compared to them, and you kind of knock them down. And then you have that generational shift where Amazon, I'll take Amazon and Sears as an example. Sears was a beast, was the largest company in the world. That's why they had the Sears Towers in Chicago. Because they were the just largest company in the world, and they're just the magnitude of them was just beyond anything that anybody ever saw. Because back in the day, they were very innovative in their own merit. Sears, because they kind of created the today we're in e-commerce. They created like the mail commerce. So if you were because they had the railroads and stuff like that. So what they did was they're able to create a huge catalog on paper and then send it to any place in America. So even if you're rural Kansas or Texas or wherever it is, you get the, you know, catalog, a huge catalog. You just go in and put an order in with the check, and then boom, they deliver it to your house after a week or two or three, whatever. Back then, it was huge innovation because these people never saw these products in their lives ever. You know, if they go to the local shop, it's very limited. All of a sudden, this whole, you know, national or international market just and a host of goods and products that comes to their doorstep very easily. That was super innovative, and Sears killed it. And then once the malls came in the 50s, 60s, 70s, they were in every mall. And it had an anchor store, and it just blew up, right? So you would think back in those days, Sears is never going anywhere, right? Nobody can even level up to them. But lo and behold, then you have the Walmart story came in, but Walmart and Sears kind of the same idea. But even Walmart, if you just put Walmart and Sears in the same bucket, they have different endings so far, but Sears already fully collapsed. But Amazon comes in 1994, I believe, that's when they started. And they took the medium of internet and deliver on its promise and level the playing field. So all of a sudden, a humongous catalog, bigger than anything that Sears was ever able to print on paper or hold in the store. And then the delivery system, you know, the rest is history. So end result, Sears got fully flushed off, which is, nobody even talks about it, but it's a huge thing that happened, a generational shift. Because Amazon, which was a super little guy, Jeff Bezos in a humble place in Seattle, with the new medium of internet penetrating into every computer, and then the smartphone penetrating to every palm of hands of people around the world, boom, created that generational shift. So once again, on the little guy, the Amazon seller, all these tools, all this medium of generative AI, are they going to be able to, you know, start the generational shift where their brands, which are maybe Amazon native, all of a sudden become a household name, and they be, you know, they kind of become a real threat to the big ones. So that's kind of the dynamic that I see in front of me.
Yeah, Yoni, I absolutely love that. And I think that that's the perfect analogy, sharing that Sears and then going to Amazon. At the end of the day, if you're not innovating your business, you are going to die, right? And I would argue, you know, Sears lasted for decades, right? And they did well for a long period of time. Now, the difference here is with technology and especially AI, the advancements are coming so rapidly that the kind of the lifespan or the half-life, so to speak, is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, which means you can't just coast. You can't rest on your laurels. What was working for your brand in 2018 cannot be what you're continuing to focus on right now. And even if it was working 2 years ago, you better start upping your game and start looking at what are the up and coming channels? How do you diversify yourself? Where is the puck going? Because if you just continue to stay and do what you've been doing, thinking that you've been making all this money, eventually the tide will change and you're going to be left holding nothing. So
yeah. I want to give a few analogies, if I may, to kind of reinforce what you just said, because I think it's very, very vital for any entrepreneur listening or watching this. I guess I'll say two things. The first thing is that the sad reality, but I think it's if you flip it around, it's actually a very exciting reality, is that entrepreneurs ultimately are very comfortable being uncomfortable. You got to get used to it. Never be comfortable. Yeah. You're always comfortable being uncomfortable because things always change. Now I'm gonna connect this to sports. Think when you're in business, think of yourself of, you know, you have a sports team. In the sports team, you can play in the field and be actually the athlete. And every year is a new season. And you got to grind to deliver results. And if you deliver well, you're going to be very well financially rewarded. Okay? So every year is just like that. You can't just sit, like you said, you cannot sit on your laurel. You're an athlete. And athletes constantly have to improve and change because you're competing against other teams. They're constantly improving. So you got to constantly improve. They have better trainers, better coaches, better methods, better strategy, better tactic. It never ends. Every season, it's a new thing. And that's why every season, they're different kind of champions. It's very grueling for every sports league. So where you're the athlete playing for the sports team, that's fine because you're the operator. But if you want this to be passive income, so think of yourself more like a sports team owner. You own the team. You don't have to do the ground on the field. But your whole organization, your team, whoever's there playing has to grind and constantly innovate and constantly be the best to, you know, to perform well and get the titles. If not, you're going to lose money. You're going to get flushed away to and go to a different league or get totally annihilated. So these are the kind of two analogies that I want to highlight because for way too long, I see that the promise or the I would say the empty promise of passive income, you know, this is easy. This is, you know, brainless work. No, it's this for me. It's kind of a discord when I see a lot of that. That's what sucks a lot of the talent into this industry, but creates a lot of false expectation where a few clicks and everything's amazing. Because it could be that you got it and whatever was working, but no guarantee is going to work. You know, next few months later, a few years later, and then you get flushed off. So if you want to be in this long term, think of yourself as an athlete, or you know, or this is like sports. If you don't want to be on the, you know, you have a good team and you can just own it. Okay, your team has to be very professional with the best players all the time, and you always have to have the A players. Because if you have any B, C players and you lose, you're losing compared to other teams. As an owner, what do? You got to shell out the cash. You got to get the Michael Jordan in your team. So that's a cost. That's an investment. That's a commitment. That doesn't come easy. So it takes us back to the original statement. You got to be very comfortable being uncomfortable, and that's a good recipe for my humble opinion for long term success in this environment.
Yoni, I love that analogy. And I think that arguably for our entrepreneurs that I think you can be an athlete, a superstar athlete, and get yourself to a seven-figure business pretty easily. But when it comes to crossing the eight-figure mark and especially going to nine figures, you have to be a master at being the owner of the business. It's no longer about how good you are and your skills and your talents. It's more about can you provide the leadership and can you, as the owner, be good at selecting and identifying talent, right? I love the analogy of sports because I think it's very evident to all of us.
1,000%.
Right?
What you just said, it's exactly what it said. There's no more or less. It was on the dot. Yeah, perfect.
But how many times do you hear people talking about, you know, hey, guess what? I hired somebody for $250,000 for my team. Most people would laugh at that and be like, oh, you're wasting all this money. But if you really take a step back and you think about this, we all like to tout, hey, I found a VA over in the Philippines. I'm paying them $2 an hour, right? It's a steal of a deal. And it's like, okay, that's cute. But let's take this sports analogy. Who would you rather have? LeBron James that you're going to be paying hundreds of millions of dollars to? Or do you want to get the person that, you know, some unknown name that's $10,000?
Yeah, the college dropout that played basketball in college, but still dropped out. And he's very cheap because he's willing to just sit on the bench or be on the field, but not really score anything. Just, you know, just because you want to pay a low salary, it just doesn't work.
Exactly. So I think that's a huge mindset shift that our entrepreneurs need to have. If you're trying to grow and scale a big business, if you're not and you're just content with what you have right now, then keep being that athlete. But just know that your upside is very limited and you got to really sit in a completely different seat and see yourself as the owner. And then you've got to start hiring those rock stars, the A players, your superstars, if you want to really scale to that nine-figure mark, for sure.
I'll put it this way. When it comes to business, you know, there's a lot of elements in the business, business costs, or especially maybe a fixed cost, that should be on the race to the bottom. So, you know, when you're sourcing, economy of scale, per unit cost should be the race to the bottom. Whatever you can do to really make it efficient with the big magnitude. So, you know, your unit economics is a race to the bottom, so you can maximize on your profit, right, on your margin. But when it comes to talent, I think this is important for somebody for listening or watching to make a switch where it's actually a race to the top. How can I apply my resources to get the best talent in the world on my team to score the most points, have the longest possible longevity with this organization and maximize cash flow? Because these top players will be the ones who actually focus on the unit economics to make it race to the bottom. So you have to distinguish between the elements that need a race to the top, which is talent, and the race to the bottom, which is anything else that, but with no compromise on quality, not on the quality and not on the talent. So once again, between the 7-8 figure to 9 figure or beyond, that should be the switches that some people should make.
I love that. Well said. Now, Yoni, you have yourself selling experience as well. Why don't you just talk briefly, you know, about that business that you scaled and what were maybe some of the big levers that you pulled in order to get yourself to a $20 million a year business?
So my journey was, I guess everybody's journey, most of the journeys of people into this industry are off the beaten path. Over a decade ago, I started selling products online. I was working for, I was doing sales and distribution for a supplements company. And when I worked there, we also had a website and we were getting orders online and we were selling to Amazon. But at some point, I was, you know, fulfilling all the orders and also doing the brick and mortar, you know, sales and distribution. I listed some products, you know, actual products I listed on eBay, and then I listed on Amazon. That's how I had my like early dabbling. But long story short, I'm Jewish and I go to synagogue. And the synagogue, I met this other gentleman. His name is Max Boren. He's still my partner for over a decade now. He was doing accounting for a furniture company. And on the sidelines, we're kind of, you know, becoming friendly and had, you know, a flaming entrepreneur spirit, I would say. And we're like constantly talking about opportunities of, you know, things to do. And we definitely saw in front of us the promise of e-commerce. And so we started selling whatever we could get our hands on, especially on eBay. And it was kind of ramping up. And then 2013, we started selling on Amazon. And then the business really, really kind of blew up. And then, you know, we reached a dimension of $20 million, you know, annual revenue. And then we actually kind of became a part of a larger group. And together as a group, we're doing about $100 million in revenue. So actually, Getida, what I do, it was born from that experience because we had so much inventory we're sending in to Amazon, to FBA centers, and so many transactions. And so much data, we're not able to use spreadsheets anymore. They were breaking. So that kind of forced us to do two things. The first thing was to create software and technology to constantly scan and audit the transactions on a large scale. And the second thing was to get talent, a team, to constantly, you know, take that data, open the cases with Amazon, manage all the back and forth, and solve the issue. So we created the solution for us. We told our friends from the industry we have these capabilities. They told us, help us, we'll pay you. And that was kind of the early genesis of Getida back in 2015. Well, I'm going to have its own track. We can put it aside for now. But on the retail side, we had four of our own brands. We used to do Travel Baby and jewelry. And then we also had access to a lot of big brands. But the business really started from me and Max, two of us. He was doing more of the sourcing and really the market research, what's working, what's not, what should be sold or not. And I was doing a lot of the operations. So I guess for this episode, you know, I would highlight that, you know, at our peak on the retail side, we had 30 to 40, you know, team members and, you know, in the United States, but also around the world. And it was a pretty strong, intense magnitude. And I experienced all these things you're mentioning of, you know, trying to be cheap and, you know, on talent and then getting talent that's simply not productive enough, and they realize, you know what, the premium is worth, you know, the payment. So we focus on hiring better and better, more expensive, but yeah, more productive. So at the end of the day, you're just making more of an outcome with the talent that you hire. And now I can shift back to Getida today. You know, when we started Getida back in 2015, it started small, and then you know, it was just growing organically from word of mouth, because the value proposition with Getida is very comfortable. There's no subscription. You don't have to pay anything. It's free to join. It's free to stay. There's no commitment. You can cancel at any time. So it was kind of growing organically for a bunch of years. So in 2019, we made a strategic decision to cash out of retail. And all the profit that we made, we'll plow it into Getida. And once our focus, attention, motivation, creativity, and intensity was in one place, instead of split it kind of 50-50 in the middle, that's when Getida took off, and we kind of took leadership on the niche. So today we're the largest organization in the world focused exclusively on this mission of maximizing FBA reimbursements for sellers. And we have a team of 240 employees in 12 countries. And we audit tens of billions of dollars of transactions daily. So for the past decade, e-commerce put me into all these trails and conditions of scaling with team, with talent on the retail side and dimensions, but also on the technology and solution providing side. So it's been a wild ride. And once again, I'm very comfortable being uncomfortable. So I've been here for more than a decade, and looking forward for another decade or more, you know, so.
I love that. Now, Yoni, I'm interested to hear, you know, you're doing you're helping operate a 9-figure brand, right? And that's where kind of the idea of Getida came from. And I think the important thing to really focus on here is that you are trying to capture margin and extra money that was just being lost, right? So tell me a little bit more about that, maybe to our sellers, that if they have not heard about you, I'm not sure how they haven't heard about Getida yet, but if they haven't heard about you, what are the ways that Amazon sellers are currently losing money and they don't even know about it?
You got it. So, you know, crash course on FBA auditing and reimbursements and what it means to Amazon sellers. So, you know, when you sell on Amazon and you ship your products into Amazon, so let's say, Josh, you shipped 1,000. So let's start with the basics of all basics, and then I'll throw in further complications to give you guys the scope and context of the challenge or the opportunity. So Josh is shipping 1,000 units to Amazon's fulfillment centers. Amazon, instead of receiving 1,000 units, they receive 990 units, right? So 10 units are missing. The responsibility and the onus is on the seller to discover that. And then, you know, open a case with Amazon and bring it to their attention. Provide necessary documentation if needed, so Amazon can investigate. And if Amazon investigates and they find the missing units, great. You can sell it, make money, problem solved. But of course, if they don't find it, Amazon does have an insurance policy. And within that insurance policy, they have the reimbursement policy. And when they reimburse you for the loss. And that's just a basic example, which most sellers can understand and relate to, because it's very intuitive. I send something, you receive it all, yes or no. ABC of logistics. But what many sellers don't realize is that once the units and inventory are inside Amazon's fulfillment centers, inside the centers, all of a sudden, units get lost, damaged, destroyed, disposed, disappeared, or get overcharged with fees. It's inside the centers, but also between the centers, because often Amazon might move around your products between centers. Let's say from Texas to California to Nevada to have that 1 or 2 day prime shipping spread. Same elements happen. Units get lost, damaged, destroyed, disappeared, all that stuff. Also from the fulfillment centers to the consumers, the customers, once the orders come in, not all the orders get there. It's not 100% perfect, right? From the consumers back to Amazon with all the refunds and the returns issues. And then you have from the fulfillment centers back to the seller if you do a removal order. So all these logistics friction points, the sellers need to be on guard to find all these discrepancies. And on an annual basis, I can share with you the data and statistics that we have over the years. The discrepancy rate on an annual basis ranges between 1 to 3% from your revenue. So if you do $1 million a year on Amazon, that could be $10,000 to $30,000 you have to kind of be on the lookout for. If you do 10 million, it's 100 to 300,000 and on it goes. So that was kind of the reality we were in. We had $100 million activity, and every year we had to kind of recover 1 to 3 million. And that was material enough for us to say, hey, we're going to apply serious resources to solve this problem at scale. So we have an airtight solution for us. And that's how Getida was born unintentionally, because we did share these capabilities with other sellers after they requested it. And that kind of opened its own track that swapped me, you know, took me in today and to focus on what I do. So at the end of the day, whatever you are doing in revenue right now, you can make your own calculation what 1% to 3% means. Another way to look at it is that for every 100 units you ship to Amazon, between 1 to 3 units is going to experience a discrepancy throughout its life cycle. So, but the responsibility is on you, the seller, to discover it and reconcile it. Now, if you've never heard of this and this is all foreign to you, you know what to do. No worries. There's solution companies out there that can help with that. We happen to be one of them. So if you ever need help, we're happy to help with that. And we're performance based. So you don't have to pay anything up front. There's no commitment. It's free to join. It's free to stay. It's very, very comfortable. So you can really focus on what moves the needle and creates a business, which is revenue and sales, sourcing, launching, all that stuff. And for us, we're like archaeologists. We always look into the past. We come with our toothbrushes in the rubble and the sand, and then we brush it until we find this golden nugget. Then we bring it back to your pocket, and only for successful, we get rewarded. So once again, if you never heard of it, now you did, and you can do, you know, you can do something about it. And if you did hear about it, but you didn't know the scope of it, what I do recommend is that if you get your own reimbursements, keep doing it. We encourage you to get everything you can get on your own, but still connect to a solution provider that can recover everything that you're missing out for whatever reason. And only if they're successful, only then you're going to get rewarded. So this way you can fulfill the maximum opportunity that you have with this recovery solution. I can share an interesting story or case study where a customer became an interesting partner to us for Getida. So today our CEO, which is Eitan Wiener, and he's also a partner of the company, he actually started his journey with Getida as a client. So Eitan has a very distinctive experience and a resume in the e-commerce industry. He started back in 2008. So he had two very successful businesses that he sold to public companies. One of them is the famous Prosper Show. He's one of the founders of the Prosper Show. It was so wildly successful, it got sold to a public company. And the second was Quantum Networks, his company where he sold all his brands. So that also got sold to a public company. So he did two exits. But what happened was we came to the Prosper Show Getida, right? And we exhibited. And he came to meet and greet the people, the companies that have a booth in the show. And he said, what do you guys do? We do reimbursement, this and that. He said, okay, let me give you guys a try. He had a really good impact. We recovered a lot of money. And then he recommended it to a few other players and they got a lot of money. And then you know, a few years later, when he sold his business, he discovered that 14% of his profit were coming from reimbursements. And then all that 14% got a multiple of whatever multiple he got when he sold the business. That was very, very material, you know, material and impactful to his exit. And then once he had time and money on his hand and he looked around, connecting and partnering with Getida made sense for him because he felt like he had the whole journey from a seller client to a successful exit. So today he's with us. He's a partner of the company, he's a CEO, and he's helping many other sellers kind of capitalize on that promise and opportunity. So yeah, hopefully that gives a bit more of a vivid explanation of the spirit of Getida with its top leadership from once again, we came from the bottom up with this journey, and also our current CEO as well.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and I think it's something that you can't overlook. Like you said, you know, 14% of somebody's profits coming directly from reimbursements. This is not something that you can overlook. So I'm curious.
I do want to highlight why. I apologize, but I want to highlight one thing. Why was, if that's a 14%, how could it be? The reason it can be is, this is very important. This is like a shifting moment in this episode. I want to highlight to everybody, if you don't get all the reimbursements that you're entitled to get, you as a seller, you lose two things. The first thing you lose is your investment, the money invested into the inventory. The second thing you lose is profit. And why? Because when Amazon pays you a reimbursement, they actually do a beautiful thing. They don't pay you the cost. They pay you the retail value. So our mission is to shift the double negative to a double positive where you get your money back and turn into profit. And that's what was 14%, because it would, with all the margins we're holding inside. And guess what? No ACOS.
Yeah.
No PPC spend. Exactly.
I love that. Yoni, and there's a time limit as well, right? How long can you actually go back?
Yeah. So today, this constantly changes. The rules of the game constantly changes, as with many other things with Amazon. So as it stands today, there's kind of a few brackets. For any weight and dimension discrepancies where they overcharge you, I can elaborate more about that later. You have 90 days, only 90 days to recover. It used to be 18 months, but it's only 90 days. And that got updated back in 2019. When you ship your products to Amazon, to the fulfillment centers in Europe, EU, UK, and Germany, all, you know, Europe, you have 6 months. In the United States, you have 9 months. Not sure why. For the same issue, different time frames for different continents. Not sure why. And then kind of everything else as a generalist, view, you have like 18 months. So in short, we can go up to 18 months. Some of them are limited to 90 days. Some of them are 6 months and 9 months, and then kind of 18 months. So these are kind of the brackets. And once again, if you don't audit and reconcile and get reimbursed on time and open the case in the allowed timeframes, that's when you lose on that, you know, opportunity that I mentioned where you lose a cost and profit.
Interesting. Now, I know, especially, I think we want to dive in, especially to the FBA fees, right? Because oftentimes we found this with our own brand. We have over 1,300 SKUs. And oftentimes Amazon's going to incorrectly measure your product for no good reason. Not sure how it happens, but you end up just you pay a higher FBA fee. However, I know that you only have kind of like 20 remeasurement cases that you can actually open per month. So what happens to a seller that has a large SKU catalog? They find more than 20, but yet they're limited to only 90 days of clawback, right, for reimbursements. What type of recommendations do you have in that situation?
So this is a complicated and loaded question. I can share with you that over the years, we kind of bundled a few sellers together that were experienced. They have super high, you know, like yourself, a big catalog with a high amount of SKUs and high volume. And they can show financially, materialistically, how much they're being impacted. So we bundled them together and kind of made a push to escalate to Amazon's higher brass and brackets. I think some of it got resolved, not sure all of it. And it's not still resolved on a mass scale, because the thing for Amazon is it's a mold. And in this mold right now, statistically, most of the sellers have like 50 SKUs or less. So it's more than enough, but it doesn't fit the mold of the ones that have over 50 or 100 or a few hundred or a few thousand, or some that have hundreds of thousands, or in the extreme cases, a few million, right? It depends, over the years, it's not in a single year, but over the time it constantly changes because they do closeouts and stuff like that. So all these onesies. But in any case, so one dimension is to escalate to the top. Another one, more tactical on the surface, is that, you know, I'll give an example. Once you connect to Getida, we provide 24/7 view on this. So once you connect to Getida, we have all the measurements, all locked into position, all the fees that are being charged. I just want to step back a little bit just to understand what we're talking about. Amazon charges the sellers a fulfillment fee every time a unit is sold. So a fulfillment fee, basically, they call it also pick and pack, because they pick it from the bin, they package in a box, they ship it out. It's a pick and pack fee. And this fee is based on the weight and dimension of the product. So the larger and heavier Amazon thinks the product is, the more they're going to charge you, right? It could be by accident, or it could be because maybe you're being attacked by another seller. I'll give two quick examples. By accident, it could be where you sell a handbag, and then somebody bought it, they return it back. And when they return it back, they put the strap on the handbag, and now it's adding 30 inches to the measurement. So when Amazon scans it in the machine, it has 38 inches extra. They recalculate, boom, they're charging more fees. So sellers don't even think about it. All of a sudden, instead of charging you $6 per unit every time they ship it, they're charging you $4. They're charging you $10. So they're overcharging you $4. You sold 10,000 units, that $40,000 you should pay extra. And you don't even know about it, right? That could be a mistake, right? Because of, the handling. Another one that we've seen over the years, you're being attacked by your competitor because you're clueless. I can take your ASIN. I can list it on my Amazon account. I never offer it. All thing I do is just change the weight and the measure, the weight and dimensions. I say, oh, instead of 4 inches, it's 400 inches. Instead of 4 ounces, it's 400 pounds. All of a sudden, Amazon's system is overcharging. You have no clue and you get flushed out. All right. So it could be, these are kind of two quick reasons. So for us, once you connect to Getida, we provide a 24/7 kind of lookout for this. So, and anytime it changes for whatever reason, we can next day or same day, we open a case with Amazon and say, hey, what's going on? Why has this changed? You know, can you please revert it back? So in these scenarios, it could be kind of a 50-50 split. Sometimes they might say, okay, let us remeasure and then utilize that one measurement out of 20 per month. Or the other 50 would be like, oh, you're right. There's no explanation for that. We're going to fix it. No remeasurement and you're good to go. So in short, the solution is real-time action, real-time tactical ability to solve it on the spot. The quicker you do, the better. You can say, hey, you just changed it. There's no reason. You don't have to even remeasure Amazon. It was here an hour ago. It was like this. An hour later or a few hours later or a day later, it's different. There's no remeasurement. Nothing changed. They can just pull the switch and put it back together and no harm done. So if you have speed, that can be an advantage. If you come a few days after, a few weeks after, it gets very clunky, very, very heavy. So they utilize that, you know, at 1 out of 20, and then you're kind of trapped in this position if you have a large catalog. So if it's any help, real-time tactics or ability, if you can't do that, once again, with a solution that can do that, we happen to be one of them, so we can provide that opportunity as well.
I love that. Fascinating. Yoni, there's a lot of reimbursement companies that have started over the last few years. And so sellers have probably been hit up multiple times. I guess my question to you is, how is Gatita different compared to all of these other people? And is there anything that sets you guys apart?
Yeah, so quick history. One second. Sorry. So when we came into the market back in 2015, we're definitely not the first, second, fourth, or I don't even know which number. Basically, we did not create this game. We just came in to play it. But today we're the largest in the world doing this, for a few reasons. One thing I'll mention, that all these solution providers, they're great. We support this industry as an industry, and we think they're doing really good things for the industry. So that's blessed. But in our perspective, we see sometimes that, you know, a lot of these solution providers, for them, it's like an add-on. It's not the only exclusive thing they do. Sometimes they do other things. They can do something stuff with advertising. They can do stuff with inventory management. They can do stuff with repricing, all these other things. So they have a kind of a platform. For them, it's like an add-on. So they'll cover some of the basics of reimbursements, because they don't, you know, once you apply 240 team members day in, day out, and over the years, tens of millions of dollars in research and development, constantly being on the cutting edge, and also having patents. We have some patents on our innovations. That creates the impact. So the focus, attention, motivation to one thing instead of four things or 20 things or whatever it is other providers are doing, I think that makes a lot of an impact, because we're able to eventually compound our ability to deliver more and more. And there's something called in Japan Kaizen, which is incremental improvement over time. That's what the Japanese invented. That's what created Honda and Toyota, where they're constantly improving over time. So the reliability and the value becomes very, very good long term. So for us, day in, day out, we're constantly improving, where other organizations, they have, you know, a group of 1, 2, 4, 5, 20, 30 people, but not all the focus and attention of the top to bottom brass is into one dimension. So that creates an impact. And at the end of the day, the impact is the performance. So the maximizing on the recovery. Oftentimes, you know, I'll say a few things. If you're using your own team and using other providers and you like them, keep them. For us, no conflict. You can come in. We can give you a free audit and show you in numbers how much is being left behind and how old it is. This issue is, 17 months old or 16 months old, which means it's being left behind. It's about to expire. So it's very, very data driven. We live in the data. And then with data, you can make an educated decision if you like us to help you recover that or not, right? And typically you say, hey, this is all money from the dead, money I don't have access to. Only if they get it to me, I pay. So it becomes a very comfortable proposition, where over time, that made the difference for many, many sellers. So we became kind of a core element or synonymous for solving this issue, because of the focus, energy, attention, which is relentless in one place with no distractions. I'll tell you another thing. Over the years, because we have such a large user base, we have tens of thousands of sellers using us daily, right? There's always that temptation to kind of add another feature or a product and upsell. So we can do PPC for you. We can do repricing for you, whatever it is, because we have quote unquote captive audience. But over the years, we decided to know. I think somebody said, if it's Warren Buffett or somebody else, that when you grow into certain dimensions and you want to be successful enough, it's the ability to say no to things, right? It's not always saying yes, it's saying no. So we said no to all that stuff. We said, this is what we do. This is the only thing we do. And we're very, very dedicated into maximizing the opportunity for all of our users. And that's going to make its impact in the market. That's the strategy we chose long-term. And long-term, there was a gap that we kind of created. Once again, we're not first or second. And we came in, there was big dogs, but a lot of these big dogs, some of them faded away completely. Some of them are kind of down and under. And for us, we made that strategic decision. At the end of the day, it proved itself. And I say one last thing. You don't get to be the largest in the world, especially when it's performance-based, due to lack of performance.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So it can't be that big. Because once again, every day we go to work, we start from zero. If we don't create a dollar for somebody, we don't eat. 240 people. That makes it very, very energetic, because we don't have an alternative. We don't have a subscription of some kind for another software that we can fall back on. So if there's a few bad weeks or bad months or whatever, we don't have those cushions. We have to constantly be on the edge for the sellers to make it on the maximum level. And this is, once again, it goes back to what I'm saying earlier. We got very comfortable being uncomfortable, and that's our kind of recipe for success, because we're constantly energetic on solving. So hopefully gives a little scope of the nuances.
Yeah, you guys are experts at what you do. Now, Yoni, this has been a fantastic episode. I think you've left our audience with lots of gold nuggets to chew on here. As we wrap things up, I'd love to leave the audience with three actionable takeaways from every episode. So here are the three actionable takeaways that I noted. You let me know if you think I'm missing something here, all right? Mm-hmm. So number one, I think if you are not paying attention to the AI space and at least experimenting with creating your own chatbot in ChatGPT or experimenting with some of the AI software that is meant for e-commerce sellers, you're going to be left in the dust. Imagine somebody that's able to figuratively create a, you know, a structure and have team members like a billion-dollar business, but with the salary of an eight-figure business, right? Imagine who's going to win at the end of the day. And that's the opportunity that AI hopefully will afford us. And so at the end of the day, it's best just to dive in and get your hands dirty, experimenting and seeing what works for your brand versus not. Action item number two is hiring MVPs or A players. Going back to the sports analogy that we talked about, if you're the owner of an NBA team, who do you want to hire? Are you trying to get the cheapest guys out there possible so that you can have a healthy profit bottom line, right? The answer is no. The healthy profit bottom line comes when your team wins the NBA championship. And that only happens when you have MVPs on your team, right? So who are you hiring? And I think it's just experiencing the mindset shift of, hey, how little can I pay somebody rather than, hey, how do I go find really, really good talent? They might require or command a much higher salary, but the amount of work that they can do and the results they can bring can be 10x what somebody that I'm paying a fraction of the price can bring. Third, last but not least, reimbursements can be a huge catalyst to bringing in additional profits to your business. I think what you highlighted, Yoni, you know, one of the black hat tactics that is out there is one of your competitors could go list your product, go in the back end, change the dimensions, and overnight you could start losing money overall, right? And you don't, and it would be difficult for you to really see, like, wait, like, how are we starting to lose money? Nothing really has changed. Now, there's ways that you could eventually go in and see that. Most sellers are overlooking, hey, what am I being charged for my FBA fees on a daily basis, right? How many units were lost in that last shipment? And so, you know, the number you shared, 14% of profits coming from reimbursements. When you start to add a 3x, a 4x multiple to that, and let's say, you know, you have $1 million EBITDA or SDE, right? That becomes basically another $1 million in your exit. And so,
and before that, if you keep on reinvesting this newly found cash, it compensates your ability over time to reinvest in the business, buy more inventory, use it more for PPC. So you're losing a lot if you're not maximizing on your cash flow. And once you put that cash flow back to work, that grows and grows. And once you do that exit again, so it's a virtuous cycle, you know, against the drainage. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you also mentioned too, that's really important is that, yes, can you do this yourself? And can you train a VA to go file reimbursements for you? You certainly can. But partnering with somebody kind of like yourself that lives and breathes this, and Amazon's constantly changing the rules and how they respond to cases and all of that, the question you need to ask yourself is, for you as the CEO, is your time better spent identifying new growth opportunities for your brand or trying to solve, you know, these reimbursement issues on a regular basis? So at the end of the day, you know, Gatita, even if you're getting a cut, it's worth my time to say, hey, they've got this covered. I don't even have to think about it. I will get 14% of my profits back, hopefully, right? And then I can go focus on new product ideas or new channels, new partnership opportunities. That's where the growth comes. So at the end of the day, it comes back to, are you assembling the right team, right? And your right team can be partners, agencies, even software companies that can make a big difference in your business. So Yoni, those are my three action items. Anything else you would add to that?
Every word will be a waste. It was beautiful.
Awesome. All right, Yoni. I love to ask each guest the following three questions at the end. So here we go. What has been the most influential book that you've read and why?
So yeah, this past year I've read Happiest Man on Earth by Eddie Jacko. Really touching story about, you know, he was his Jewish gentleman. He already passed away, but he was born in Germany. He survived through the Holocaust, through many camps, but nevertheless, he never lost his spirit, his humanity, his happiness. And after he survived, he immigrated to Australia, you know, got married, brought up a family, a beautiful family, and he lived to over 100. I think he passed away at 101, and it became this national symbol for Australia because he went all over Australia and the world, you know, sharing that powerful message of staying happy and optimistic through major challenges and troubles and catastrophes. So that was a very powerful book that I read lately that I highly recommend.
Awesome. I love a good new book recommendation. I have not heard that one.
And an Amazon seller recommended to me, somebody from Australia, an Amazon seller from Australia. I was in Mexico in a conference. She recommended it. So thank you for that. I forgot her name, but thank you, Amazon sellers.
I love it. All right. Question number two, what is a new productivity tool or a new software tool that you think is going to be a game changer?
There's a software tool that we're using for a while. I think it's a game changer because it provides an extra layer of understanding what the hell is going on in this marketplace. So we use it for our needs to understand where the sellers are at. It's called Smart Scout. It's by Scott Needham. He has his own show, a podcast show, a really good one. It's called the smartest seller in the room. So he's a pretty well-known figure. If you don't know him yet, check him out. But a tool is called Smart Scout. What we are able to do with this tool is to really understand like where are the sellers located globally and what's the status of each seller and their health. But if we can do it, it means you, the seller, can do it, and especially hone in on the categories and ASINs and sellers or brands that you're competing with. Because the more you know, the more you understand what works for them, that can work for you and always, you know, stay on top of it or even be more edgier. So I think that's a powerful tool for sellers out there that they should know about. And if you're using it right now, kudos. If you're not, check it out.
I love it. Love a good new software tool. All right. Last but not least, who is somebody that you admire or respect the most in the e-commerce space that other people should be following and why?
All hail to the king, Kevin King. He's been around for so long and he never loses edge. He also recently kind of launched his $1 billion newsletter. So it's free for you to subscribe and lots of content, lots of tactics, things that work, things that don't work. So, you know, very powerful. So I highly recommend.
I agree. We had Kevin King on the podcast. He is one of our first episodes, shared a lot of knowledge. So Yoni, this has been a fantastic episode. Thanks so much for sharing your insights and your journey as well. For our listeners that want to learn more, they're interested in learning more about Getida or following you and your story, where can they find you at?
So if you want to check out Getida, just visit getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A.com. All the content is there. We have blog articles about everything that's going on in the industry. We have podcast shows that we're going to have Josh hopefully very soon, or he might be, but it could be that you're watching this. He's already on our show. It's called Prime Talk. I can't wait, to capture Josh's story. And so, yeah, that's getida.com. Myself, always available on social media. Just, you know, check me out, Yoni Mazur. I'm pretty active on Facebook and LinkedIn. Any question you have, any thought, any idea, just, you know, warm advice, feel free to reach out. I'm at your disposal.
Awesome. Yoni, thanks again for your time and for sharing your knowledge with us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Visit ecombreakthrough.com for more information. If you've enjoyed today's episode, the best way you can show your appreciation is by clicking the subscribe button and quickly leaving a review. See you again next time.